And so we're going to go off and we're going to do our own thing. And I think if you asked me today, Tara, do you think we'll work together again? And we said, I would say yes. I think
yes, I definitely. Absolutely.
You know, it's...
No question.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 1 for the week of August 19th, 2013. I am man of good humor, David T. Cole, and I'm here with bomb pop Joe Reed.
Popping sound.
30-second flavor, Sarah D. Bunting.
Fruitcake.
And Dairy Queen, Tara Ariano.
Hello!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Extra Hot Great. It is our first episode of our previously TV reboot.
Woo!
And we need to welcome in our fourth chair, Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Very glad to have you join the gang. And also, let's wish Joe a happy birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday yesterday.
Thanks.
And you smell like one, too.
All right, let's get into it. Our lead topic this week is summer television. Summer's almost over, so we're going to look back on what was offered, and we're going to do a round robin. And our first topic is TV shows that are terrible for any time of the year.
I actually forgot what mine was. Oh, yeah, Siberia. Siberia was one that I had such high hopes for because I have long thought that a scripted show set behind the scenes of a reality show would be really interesting. Just because, I guess the reason that TV networks wouldn't do it for realsies is because it would just make even more obvious all of the tricks of the trade and make it harder, I guess, theoretically, for people to enjoy those shows. I doubt it. I think most people are pretty savvy and know what's fake. But, Siberia is not set behind the scenes of a reality show, really. I mean, they sort of show how producer intervention is involved, but
and the
not
concept
really.
Of Siberia inside of this show is that people are dumped in Siberia in sort of like it's a survival show.
Yeah, it's like it's a lot like Survivor, and I was so impressed in the first episode with how much they made it match the style of a reality show, and all of the actors were totally unknown to me, so that was impressive too. Siberia is, in fact, somewhere in rural Manitoba, apparently. But then it just turned into Lost.
Didn't we already know that, though, about Manitoba?
But then it just turned into, like, a dumb Lost thing where it's like, oh, it's not just fucked up shit happening on a reality show because producers are making fucked up shit happen. It's now there's some kind of mystical something. And it's like, I was so on board and then so off board so quickly. I think I stopped it in the middle of an episode. And however, saying that... the show that may, I hope, fulfill my hopes is Lifetime is doing a scripted version set behind the scenes of a reality show like The Bachelor. And it's based on a short film that I haven't seen, but I saw the trailer. Anna Camp is in it and Ashley Williams, the one who was on How I Met Your Mother. Whichever Williams sister is not the one on Nashville. So even though Marty Noxon is behind it, I'm hopeful that one will be a little bit smart. Lifetime has been impressing me lately with, I'll say, some of their programming. Not all of it, Baby Sellers, but we'll see. We'll see how that one pans out. I think it's coming next year.
My too bad even for summer TV show is Mistresses. I gave up after 2 episodes. I think it really wanted to be this delicious, trashy nighttime soap. But unfortunately, it's boring. It stars Alyssa Milano and Sun from Lost.
Oh, right.
And some other boring people as people who are either cheating on each other, being cheated on, or both. That may or may not be true anymore. I gave up.
Yep.
If Alyssa Milano is the Olivier of the cast, you're kind of in trouble. Like, there's overacting, which is great for a nighttime soap, and then there's like barely registering. The plotting is too dumb even for a nighttime soap opera. It was like devolving to the level of brain transplant on Soap Dish. If they had a sense of humor about it, that's fine, but my esteemed colleague Tara wrote a piece about how stupid it was that Alyssa Milano's character wouldn't open the results of a paternity test. Not that we didn't all know what the results were, but I mean, come on. And finally, the only remaining reason to watch a show like this is the either good or so bad they're good outfits.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, they just looked so cheap. It was like Dress Barn. It's really hard to dress Alyssa Milano's figure badly, like whatever her other talents may or may not be. She has a cute figure and she can wear the clothes. And they put her in like a tent. I don't know.
Hands up when Sarah said Dress Barn, how many people's minds went straight to The Simpsons kidnapping grandpa scene. Take us to Dress Barn.
I think that's what happened. Reenactment.
Sun from Lost has some okay outfits, but yeah, I'm still watching it. And my main problem with it is that for a show called Mistresses, it sure doesn't have very many mistresses in it. Like, other than isolated individual instances of infidelity, the title is very, very misleading. And also, Sarah, since you stopped watching it, somebody's 3 years dead husband turned out to have faked his death.
I knew it. And I don't blame him. She's annoying. Happened.
And he's not a billionaire or something. He's just just a dude who's trying to get out of his debts. Not believable and stupid. Yet I'm still watching it.
As happens from time to time. Yes. So a lot of people seem to like the bridge. I made it 10 minutes into the bridge.
Woo. Wow.
I think mostly just because the Diane Kruger character was unacceptable to me. The Diane Kruger character in those 10 minutes really just presented herself as, to me, almost a parody of your Carrie Mathesons from Homeland tied up with what's her name from The Killing and just sort of amplified to, let's see how far we can take a ostensibly professional woman in a fairly serious job and make her incredibly unsuitable for dealing with other human beings in their entirety. And it felt like, I honestly thought it was a joke. And it was too aggravating and I couldn't deal with it. And I guess I will hear arguments on whether it's worth going back into it, but that was one of those life's too short kind of moments for me. It's just I don't feel like digging through this character to find something worth watching.
No, I'm certainly not going to argue with you about the character or the actress, because I've argued at length that was bad casting, but I'm wondering how much of it for you really was Kruger and how much is the character.
It might have been, although I've liked her in the past, although maybe that was a Tarantino working magic with untalented people thing, because he's done that before.
He does do that.
I don't know. And I like Damien Bashir fine. And the idea seemed okay to me. But it was also one of these things where it is one of these sort of long form police procedurals. So I know that if I'm going to enjoy it, I'm going to enjoy it in it for the long haul kind of way. And I just didn't want to sign up for that much time with that person.
Yeah, I can't blame you. Me and Tara are big fans of the original, and Sarah's watched it too, and I think she's enjoyed it. The Danish, Swedish, The Bridge, and the differences are pretty key, certainly as they apply to the female lead. In the original, she's not called out as Asperger directly. She's just sort of a little weird. She has some of those tendencies and characteristics, but there seems to be more to it. And also, they're not playing the whole show as this very dire and serious situation. The whole thing has this sort of mischievous quality to it. And the killer who is sort of doing his deeds for social commentary, it plays much better in the original. And it's actually clearly defined, each sort of episode has a sort of a different, focus for him.
Yeah.
And the female character sort of her, deficiencies, I suppose, whatever. I mean, that's not the right word. Yes. Actually work in her favor because, she is very, she is the most by the book cop that ever was, because that's what she understands. She only understands absolute truths and absolute honesty and that sort of thing. Whereas in the new one, in the US one, I think they really muddled that quality to the character, where sometimes she has very Asperger's tics and characteristics, but other times she kind of like they let her slide into an emotional response that seems off character for that kind of thing. And I think it kind of muddies the waters with that character, where in the original I was like, I was sold on it. Like I did a piece for the site and I described the original version of her as Data minus the emotion chip he sometimes had, you know. And she's sort of still like that, but you know, she's cute and, you know, and says yep a lot. So I don't blame you at all, Joe. I'm sort of like on the tail end of giving up on this version too. And
however, they are still sending us screeners, so the rule applies
once again.
And I think it was oversold too. I think a lot of the early criticisms were really gung-ho on it, and I think they were sort of like projecting a bit. I've read so many things about the town as a character, and that hasn't happened at all. It's not very, it's not like The Wire at all in that regard, where you really get a flavor of the human ecosystem of the city. Not happening at all. And that it wasn't really a thing in the original either.
Well, that's the thing. The original is set between a town in Sweden and
Malmo.
Yeah, Malmo in Sweden, and is it Copenhagen in Denmark? Okay. And so, you know, between those two, there's not really the huge, enormous discrepancies of wealth and status and class and stuff as there are between El Paso and Juarez. So that adds a whole other wrinkle to this that I think makes it more manipulative and heavy-handed and whatever.
Yeah, and the original creators, when other countries started buying the rights to them, you know, they would consult, and they were pitching for U.S.-Canada border for that reason, that they're sort of like cultures that share a lot more in common and there's less disparity. So, but there's still that, you know, that jurisdictional thing going on. Yeah. No blame for me on this one, Joe.
No.
No.
All right. Thank you.
My pick, I know you're looking for mine. You know, playing off Tara Siberia, I got one that's actually a reality show, and it's called Capture, and it is so terrible.
Oh no.
Oh my god, it is.
I think it didn't record last night, sorry.
It's on the CW, and basically as Tara pointed out, it's Tag, the reality show. It's just
stop.
It's about Tag.
It's like 20 people playing tag, except there's like there's this thing called the Talon, which is basically like a disc you have to stick to somebody's back.
It's the Cheesecake Factory, your cable's ready.
It is. It's totally
that you smack on someone else.
You're right.
Wow.
Well, the bad news is I've been caught. The good news is I'm going to have some Penny Alfredo. So and for a game of tag, they really, oh God, it's just like needlessly complex and sort of like, here's my biggest indicator. Here are the teams for Capture. There's the black team. There's the blue team. There's the gold team. There's the green team. There's the lime team. There's the gray team. There's a pink team. There's a purple team. There's a red team. There's a teal team. There's a white team. And there's a yellow team. So not only are there 2,000 teams, they're actually basically repeating colors. Like what happens when... You know, you really want to get the yellow team, but you come across the gold team. You're like, oh, you know,
oh my God.
You guys got any ID so I can see if I'm capturing the right guy? And the sets are so cheap. And there's this one part in the show where talons rise from columns. Like, you know, they come from the bottom of the column. And you can see the column moving because it hasn't been anchored to anything. And sometimes when they, like, hit things, the tops sort of, like, pop off a little bit. Like, they're just laid on, like, a loose Tupperware lid on top of something. It's just so bad. It's so budge. And it's just tag. I mean, is that what we've come to? Like, I don't like reality shows, but God. Like, put a little effort into it, people. Yep. Jeez.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I did a post about the ways that they could make it more interesting, maybe, but even those are kind of a reach.
I think it's beyond redemption. Stupid. Yeah. All right. Let's get into the good stuff. The stuff that started in the summer here, and summer TV, but it's good for any time of the year, Tara.
My pick is The Fosters on ABC Family, which just wound up. I was going to say it's first season, but it's ABC Family, and they'll have seasons be like 30 episodes long and cut them up into, you know, four segments or whatever, but it's off the air until ? And I was dubious about this one because it's executive produced by Jennifer Lopez and because it's about a foster family and their name is actually Foster, which, come on.
Wow.
But I know, but I know, but listen, guys. It's actually great. The couple who are adopting all the kids, because eventually, by the end of this chunk of episodes, nobody's even a foster kid anymore, but that's fine, are lesbians who are played by Sherry Somm and Terry Polo. And the show, I think the deficit that a lot of shows that have non-mainstream, that's, you know what I mean, that have characters that are like outside of what we've seen on TV for the our whole lives,
right,
they tend to be like, they're sainted, or, you know, it's not even an issue that they're gay, and like the show does not paper over their differences at all, and it built to them getting married in the finale, and they had like issues about, you know, the acceptance of their family and how each of them felt about the institution, you know, being lesbians and stuff. So all of that was interesting. And in addition to that, there's a juvenile delinquent character who none of her issues were papered over. She had problems coming into it, and she still had problems. It wasn't just that she was waiting for the right family to find her. Two of the other characters were involved with a family that are undocumented. So they dealt with that in a really smart, challenging, tough way that didn't make it seem like there was going to be a happy ending for them. So for a show that I realize is mostly meant for teenagers, it's actually really gripping and interesting, and I was surprised every week by how good it was.
And the fact that, you know, it's called The Fosters, and they are the Fosters, and this foster children sort of sets your expectations a bit low, and then when you watch a quality show, I imagine then you're like, oh
yeah,
pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's on my list of things to catch up with, for sure.
It's not on Hulu or anything, but I'm sure it's coming to Netflix soon enough. And it is on iTunes, and if you buy it, I promise, I'm not going to guarantee to get anyone's money back, but I think that you will be surprised and pleased by what you see.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of catching up on things, I did have BBC's Broadchurch as my excellent TV of the summer, but I'm going to change my vote last minute because Broadchurch is a totally solid British whodunit. And so far I'm really enjoying it, even though it's not perfect and is actually driving me nuts in some ways. But what I would recommend is catching up on the original Bridge, because I powered through all the episodes to be done in time for the American version. And then the American version was meh. Like, I don't really care for Kruger. Demian Bashir is, as usual, just kind of okay. Like, I'm not really sure where the love is. Like, I could listen to him read things for hours, but like on screen, it never quite catches fire for me. And the original is like, it's quirky, but not like quirky TM. It's just like, it has its quirks and it knows when to be serious. It's tonally wonderful. You start to feel oppressed by the way it's lit and like the color palette. It's really good. It's a good use of your time, and I highly recommend it.
I find that it's foreign enough to make it seem exotic and super interesting in that way, but it's you know, it has elements that you're used to, so it's accessible, but yet somehow like, ooh, this is shiny and new.
And then you randomly say duck to people, and they're like, what? Yeah. Why?
Precise.
Why
are you?
Yeah, mine is the one that probably everybody's expecting to hear, is Orange is the New Black, which I was going to get fancy and I was going to get like whatever, try and show how like smart and different I am. But no, I love Orange is the New Black just as much as everybody else does, because that's the right call. Like, that's the right decision. It's funny watching that after watching, and I'm still only halfway finished with House of Cards, and I will, I'm sure, finish it at some point. And after powering through Arrested Development, which I do think got better and whatever, that's a whole other different conversation. But Orange is the New Black really reminded me of just like, oh, right, this is what it's like to be completely addicted to a television show and to like keep watching it, not like a chore, but just like I can't actually stop myself from switching to the next episode. So I think ultimately there's a lot of like Weeds-based consternation where people are sort of like, oh, it's Jenji Cohen, and, you know, will things fall apart, basically. And I think Weeds had problems in its later seasons, but whatever. That's also another conversation that we're not going to have. But I think the primary thing is we have this main character who's this yuppie lady who goes to prison for things that she had put behind her. And so long as her character become somebody who bad things can happen to without becoming like what Nancy Botwin happened on Weeds, where it was just like she was basically addicted to making the wrong choice at every turn. And so long as it doesn't turn Piper into this like Job figure, from the Bible, not from Arrested Development. Although, let's not rule that out either. And then just, it's the best supporting cast on television. I know everybody's sort of caught up in the idea of it's, you know, it's racially diverse and it's, you know, telling stories that we haven't really told. And I think that's like, there's truth to that. There's also, that's being a little oversold in that ultimately these are broad strokes stories that are sort of types where it's like, oh, it's the, you know, single mom and it's the, you know, meth addict, whatever. But I think ultimately just beyond the types, they're all really, really strong performances in characters that even just within the prison ecosystem, you really, really care about. What's... And I think it just has made an environment that like feels very full. I think you get the sense of the way this prison runs without it being like very technical nuts and bolts.
Yeah. What I was going to say is what's amazing to me about it is that a lot of times when you watch a show that has a very large ensemble cast, Arrested Development is a good example. Sometimes when they focus on like there, it feels like you can, they can never make all of the characters equally interesting. And there's always a point where you're like, oh, it's another whoever episode. But to me, like every episode, every time they focused on someone new, it was always compelling to me on Orange is the New Black. And like they, a lot of thought has gone into the way they drew all of those characters, I think.
Yeah. Well, and even when it's like, oh, it's a Sophia episode and you get like one or two or three like flashbacks to Sophia before she came to prison. But it's not like that character dominates the episode so thoroughly that even if that's maybe not your favorite character that you will just have to check out of the entire episode.
Right.
Whereas I feel like in Lost, it tended to be like, oh, it's a Jack episode. God damn it.
Yes.
Like that kind of thing. No,
everyone
it's really
probably
fantastic.
Had a different person on Lost that was that person
right.
for them.
And I would ever, like, I was going to take time to, like, whatever, rank the supporting characters on Orange, but, like, that's a Sisyphean task. And I just want to say, stick up for, I think, the most underrated character, who is Watson, who is the former track star.
Right.
Who got sent to the shoe for having the screwdriver, even though she didn't have the screwdriver.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm hoping season two brings more of her in that I think it's a really sympathetic story. And she's sort of like one of those middle ground characters that isn't too crazy. And I think those characters, holding on to those characters is very important. Because it does run the risk of everybody's got a crazy quirk to
them.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and stay tuned for on the site soon. We'll be having a everybody's favorite Orange is the New Black character rundown. So maybe Watson will make an appearance there.
It's tomorrow as of this recording.
All right. Lastly, my choice for a great summer show is, and it speaks to me personally because it's stupid and weird, is Axe Cop.
Time for Axe Cop to go on a night mission.
Axe Cop night mission!
So Axe Cop, animated show on Fox's version of Adult Swim.
Yes.
Really is scratching my Venture Brothers itch.
Warthog, man.
You're not a bad guy. What are you doing lurking in the shadows? And why are you crying?
All my friends are gone. Someone stole them.
First, stop crying. I don't like it. Second, did you say your friends were stolen?
Yes. What kind of guy steals someone's friends?
A bad guy.
A very bad guy.
No, the king of all bad guys. And lucky for you, I know how to defeat him and get your friends back.
You do? How?
With a giant dinosaur horn.
Is there a dinosaur horn store?
Don't you know it? It's on another planet. There. See it twinkle?
Yeah, that's nice.
Let's go!
Great, we'll take my car.
No, we'll take my car. It's cooler, and I know a shortcut. Over that awesome ramp.
Come on! Move it!
Can't you see we're on a night mission?
That's Nick Offerman as Axe Cop. He's a cop who has an axe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is started as a web series. It was stories from like...
a web comic strip.
Yeah, a web comic strip. A 20-something comic artist and his, I think, somewhere around eight or nine...
Five.
Oh, is it? Five-year-old brother writes the stories such as they are. And the comic, you know, it's a lot of stuff like, well, I'm going to poison all the bad guys. No, the bad guys are dead. It's just like, it's... it's quick, random, and full of action and no plot in the way that all kids' stories are when they're playing with their toys. And it translates really well. They did a really good job bringing, you know, a little more depth to the stories in Axe Cop, but not too much. There's not a lot of character development.
No.
Except when, say, a superhero eats an avocado and becomes Avocado Man or right. what have you. Great voice cast. They got Nick Offerman, Ken Moreno.
Rob Hubel.
Yeah. Megan Patton Malawi. Oswald, Peter Serafinowicz.
Uh-huh.
And the other voice you heard was Pete Campbell from Mad Men. He's Bat Warhawk, man.
Yep.
It just, something about Venture Brothers in the last couple of years has been off. It hasn't really captured that sort of zany, kooky cast of 1,000 characters mayhem it used to have in its early seasons.
Also not enough Brock.
And not enough Brock. And this really is filling that void for me. So it's on midnight's on...
It's on at 11.
11 on Friday, Saturday?
And if you can
Saturday.
Track down the babysitting episode, do
oh,
so.
So good.
Brilliant, yeah. brilliant Unibaby. 15 minutes.
Yeah, so highly, highly recommended. All right, that music means it's time for the canon, in which we nominate an episode of a show for induction into the extra hot great canon.
Are you in the mafia?
Am I in the what?
Whatever you want to call it, organized crime.
That's total crap. Who told you that?
Dad, I've lived in the house all my life. I've seen police come with warrants. I've seen you going out at 3 in the morning.
So you never seen Doc Cusimano go out at 3 in the morning on a call?
Did the Cusimano kids ever find $50,000 in Krugerrands and a 45 automatic while they were hunting for Easter eggs?
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive. And you're the last person I would want to perpetuate it.
Fine.
There is no mafia. All right, look. Med, you're a grown woman. Almost. Some of my money comes from illegal gambling and whatnot. How does that make you feel?
At least you don't keep denying it like Mom. Kids in school think it's actually kind of neat.
Seen The Godfather, right?
Not really. Casino we like. Sharon Stone, 70s clothes, pills.
I'm not asking about those bums. I'm asking about you.
Sometimes I wish you were like other dads. Then like Mr. Scangarello, for example. An advertising executive for Big Tobacco. Or lawyers. Ugh, so many dads are full of shit.
And I'm not.
Finally told the truth about this.
This is college. The fifth episode of The Sopranos' first season, which I am nominating for inclusion in the canon. This is the episode in which Tony Soprano takes his daughter Meadow on her college tour, and he spots an old associate while they're on the road. Carmela is at home recuperating from the flu with, quote, help from Father Phil, and everyone gets something of an education in the way things really are. I feel like this episode makes a lot of critics' best of lists for The Sopranos, and I'm not sure I agree that it's the best. I think Pine Barrens is better, but that could just be because I think it's funnier. But college nails so many things. The college trip, the weird way dads always want to see the school paper, the awkward evolution of a dad's relationship with his little girl, and the realization that even though she's no longer little, she may have become an adult ally. This episode informs the relationship between Meadow and Tony for the rest of the series in both positive and negative ways, that they can never quite bear to tell the whole truth to each other about themselves, or to themselves about each other. Their next road trip rest stop informs us, in case we didn't already get the point, that Tony is a hypocrite, and not chastened enough by his conversation with Meadow, his first call is to his Russian mistress, Irina, and then to his wife. While he's on the phone, Tony thinks he spots Febby Petrullio, who ratted on a bunch of Sopranos associates and went into witness protection, then got kicked out of the program, and now makes a nice living on the college lecture circuit. Tony peels out of the gas station to follow Febby, and he's already lying to Meadow again, telling her it's an old friend, and he's just fooling around while driving like a maniac in pursuit. Tony's instinct, as with few other people in his life, is to level with Meadow, and in a way to try to absolve himself, make himself worthy of his daughter's adoration. But that instinct is always at war with a much stronger one, the one towards defensive rationalizing, which we will hear in this next clip.
That stuff we talked about before, how's that sitting with you?
Not like I wasn't 90% sure already.
What about your brother? Does he know?
I think so.
Now, there was a time, Ed, when the Italian people didn't have a lot of options.
You mean like Mario Cuomo? Sorry.
You know, I put food on the table. My father was in it. My uncle was in it. Maybe I was too lazy to think for myself. Considered myself a rebel. Maybe being a rebel in my family would have been selling patio furniture on room 22.
Please note that the reference to patio furniture is the first of its kind and certainly not the last. We hear this repeatedly as his alternative timeline throughout the series. Meadow confesses a bit later that she's done some speed, adding that she's telling her father this because he was honest with her earlier. Once Tony is calmed down, he admits that he's glad she told him, and she is too. I'm glad we have that kind of relationship, she says. But there's only so much honesty Meadow really wants. Despite Tony's clearly sketchy behavior, talking on payphones at motels, a bloodied hand, she chooses to accept his explanations or at least not question him too closely. He's her father, and she's not prepared for that truth in its entirety. Lucky for Tony, since he's incapable of being honest even with himself, and certainly isn't going to tell his hungover teenager that he's had Christopher track Febby down. Febby is tipped to Tony's presence and tries to hire a couple of junkies to hit Tony before Tony can hit him. This is a scene that typifies The Sopranos' dark humor, and we'll hear it in this next clip.
I would have done it myself last night, but some people came along. But anyway, listen, it's a great town car, new model. You pick him up on the Colby campus, stay on him.
Where on the Colby campus?
What'd I just say? His kid's applying. The fucking admissions office.
Oh, okay.
You follow him. An hour out of town, you pull up alongside, boom, 12 gauge.
Fuck that.
Lon, you do what I ask, so you'll never get another bag off me.
No. Fuck that.
Fuck that! You want the cops to find out who burnt down the historical house?
Fuck you, fuckwad!
We'll volunteer firemen together, asshole! I know!
There's something about that fuck you, fuckwad that I love. In any case, Tony ends up strangling Febby in the parking lot of his travel agency and goes straight from this ugly physical murder to retrieve Meadow from the Colby admissions office. I wouldn't call it an effortless switch between worlds or moods, but that he's able to do it at all speaks volumes about Tony's character and about James Gandolfini's performance. This is a dangerous sociopath, physically intimidating, and yet we're relating strongly to his point of view here and going forward. Back at home, the pathetic nomance between Carmela and Father Phil is coming to a head. Father Phil stops by on a, quote, pastoral visit, but it's really to drink wine and eat food. The next clip doesn't just highlight the clumsy flirtation between them, the lending of books, the talking of Ziti, the having an affair of the mind. It's also classic Father Intintula.
I got something for you. It's what we were talking about. The chapter on Buddhism is spectacular, but I don't want you going over to Los Zany Zenys.
Fat chance. It's funny, I could never just sit on the floor and think of nothing. Thank you.
Sure. You'll see how Islam is gotten a bad rap in current culture, and well, this Chianti though is beyond reproach. Word up.
Oh, I know you can't see me, but I'm making the jerk off motion.
I could feel
so
it.
Hard.
Yeah, yeah. The breeze was fluttering my eyelashes. I would have also clipped his horrendous Bobby D imitation when he's envisioning Robert De Niro as the star of The Last Temptation of Christ. But quite frankly, it's too painful, and I respect our listeners. It's really hard to see what Carmela sees in Father Phil, but between the wine, the fact that Father Phil is everything Tony isn't, well-read, good Catholic, attentive to her, and Dr. Jennifer Melfi happening to call just then to cancel her next appointment with Tony, thereby revealing to Carmela that Tony had lied about Melfi being a woman, a number of factors push Carmela and a drunk Father Phil into almost kissing, although technically it's Carmela's breaking down into tears during the remains of the day and Father Phil hearing her confession that sets things in motion. This is the closest Carmela ever really comes, in my opinion, to admitting her full complicity in the life she and Tony have made. Even during their separation in season 5, she never takes quite this much responsibility for her role in things.
Go on.
I have forsaken what is right for what is easy. Allowing what I know is evil in my house. Allowing my children, oh my God, my sweet children, to be a part of it. Because I wanted things for them. I wanted a better life, good schools. I wanted this house. I wanted money in my hands, money to buy anything I ever wanted. I'm so ashamed. My husband, I think he has committed horrible acts. I think he has, well, you know all about him, Father Phil. But I'm the same, I've said nothing, I've done nothing about it. I got a bad feeling. It's just a matter of time before God compensates me with outrage for my sins.
During this next clip, which is what finally puts a stop to the impending MASH session between Carmela and Father Phil, imagine that each of them is looking between the other one's eyes and mouth in that pre-kiss way throughout the clip.
That was AJ. He's sleeping over.
I see.
At a friend's house.
Oh.
The Pusillos, I don't know if you know them.
Oh. Oh. All right.
What?
Oh.
Are you all right? Father Phil? Are you all right?
Nothing like reverse peristalsis to throw cold water on your repentance. That and realizing for the first of many times that it's really, really hard to be righteous because it also means you'll be poor. College showcases a number of other by now familiar themes and character beats, like that moron AJ not knowing the difference between boiled and poached eggs, the incredible shifting timeline of Johnny Boy Soprano's death. Here we're told that Febby Petrullo flipped, quote, 10 years ago when the old man was sick, which puts Johnny Boy's final illness in the late 80s. When we finally see his headstone, the end date is 84. Christopher's eagerness to do the job that'll finally get him his button, in this case offering to fly up and off Febby Petrullo himself, and ongoing themes of little F family versus big F family, Tony's conception of himself as a good guy and beleaguered middle manager versus the ugly reality, which is that the strangling of Petrullo takes 36 seconds and is shot in unrelenting close-up. Many of the episode's best moments don't really translate to audio. Jamie Lynn Sigler's rainbow of eye rolls when Tony is embarrassing her in front of the Colby students comes to mind. Not to mention the statue of Ronald Reagan with the oversized lips that confirms that, quote, Fred Peters is the guy Tony's been looking for. And of course, the late Feeney's various subtle plays on shame and panic. But mostly it's a deft harmonizing of all the main themes in the show over its 6-season run. It's funny, sad, and frustrating. It's the Feeney at his best acting-wise, and the supporting players are great, too. I have to give Paul Schultz credit as Father Phil throughout his run on the series. He is fearless in his approach to the character's nebbishy self-regard.
Yep.
I've never considered College my favorite episode, but I think it definitely merits a slot in the series' top 5 and absolutely a spot in the Extra Hot Great canon. What say you, friends?
I agree. And I think I had forgotten since watching this episode the first time about the confession scene, because you're right, that is the only time that she really admits what she, what her part is in all this. Even the scene that every, including me, everyone remembers, where she goes to a psychiatrist on her own and she's like, but maybe we need counseling. And he's like, no, you need to leave him. He's a murderer.
Yeah.
Even in that scene, she's sort of still trying to kind of mealy mouth it in the way that she doesn't hear. And I always liked Meadow and Tony together. I for all the reasons that you said, their relationship is really well drawn. Obviously, recognizable to me as the daughter of an Italian man who's very gruff, not in the mafia, as far as I know. Maybe in the Registrar Pakistani mafia. just kidding, Dad.
Sweet Lou.
Hear this. But a lot of Tony's mannerisms really reminded me of my dad. So I have a soft spot for him for that reason, if not other things about his character, obviously. And this episode is such a cliche to say it's shot like a movie, but there's so many moments where I was just drawn up short by how a shot was composed. And the one where Febby finally expires, the way it's framed with yeah, that sort of triangle shape and with the flags from the travel agency behind them, like, it's
the bunting.
Yeah, exactly. It's it's just really shocking and well composed and looks like a piece of art. And yeah, I think this is an excellent episode. And yes, final mention for Paul Schultz, the biggest shithead on the show.
Yeah.
And fearless is a great way to describe his character because he is never redeemed. He's always this much of a Dorcas.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I'm glad you clipped that scene with the zany zen. He's like, shut up, father. Let's rap. You're so full of it.
Couldn't resist.
And also the fact that he comes over supposedly to see how she's doing when she's sick and then is like, also make me dinner. Like, really?
Yeah.
But of course, really. Yes, really.
Yeah. I feel like I have ultimately made my peace with the fact that I liked The Sopranos and never quite loved it. This episode is a pretty good exception to that, although it also brings up one of the big things for me about The Sopranos, which was that Tony does these terrible things and is more honest about it, and Carmela just sort of lies to herself and lies to herself. And ultimately, the fan base loves Tony for it and kind of hated Carmela for it. And I know the show doesn't exactly play to that so much. And the show, I think, has a lot more sympathy for Carmela than a lot of the fans did, and I sort of can't ever separate the sort of lionization of Tony Soprano from what we see on the show. But all that said, I thought this show deals with those aspects actually pretty straightforwardly, which is that Meadow, you even hear her in the car, like, say, like, well, you know, Dad, at least you're being honest about it. Mom's just a liar. And she wants to give him credit for that honesty. And yet by the end of the episode, we sort of see that honesty laid bare and just sort of like, oh, right. Like, he's so honestly a monster killer. Like, and I think that's true about the Carmela confession scene. It's that it's really, really bracingly, like, vulnerable too. And like in most of her other scenes, either she's mealy-mouthed, as you mentioned, Tara, or she sort of tempers it with anger in that she's been put in a situation or other people have lied to her. And in that one, it's just, she's ashamed. Like, that line sort of sells it all. And I think also, I mean, bonus points for how incredibly young AJ and Meadow look in this episode, which,
oh my
is
God,
like
his bowl haircut. It's
like
amazing.
That haircut is a billion extra points in this episode's favor, honestly. And also the scene where Christopher's at the payphone in the middle of the driving rainstorm, and he makes like half of a comment about like, "Hey, I'm sitting down here in the rain," and Tony's like, you want to get a job doing something else, or I forget what the line is.
Yeah, it's like, if you want to stay dry, work at a bank or something.
Yeah. And it's just like Tony,
better than that.
Tony can't for even half a second like entertain the notion that somebody else might be going out of his way and putting himself out. And I like that.
Sarah, I just have to say, this might have been the most scholarly sounding canon submission we've ever had. That was really spot on. That makes me feel bad about having maybe to do next time and be like, is it's good, makes me happy.
Use the word tangentious.
Yes.
Dumb. Just kidding. Sorry. I'm not usually
it's
that.
Good.
That was not a complaint by any means. The fact that how much I historically hated the Carmela Priest storyline as it popped up in the movie is a testament to this episode that I actually like it engaged me, you know, instead of repulsing me.
In the show, not the movie.
In the show, yeah. I love a good road trip. I love it when the cards are just laid on the table. I think this episode with Meadow and Tony actually kind of reminded me of the season premiere of Breaking Bad when Hank and Walt just are like in the garage and it's like, well, let's just say what we all know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And see what happens. And I think this is sort of like, you know, the family dynamic version of that power play in Albuquerque. And, you know, as Joe was saying, it's interesting that, you know, even within this honesty, there is a power struggle. You know, Meadow plays Carmela off Tony. You know, I'm glad you're honest with me because Mom never would be. You know, there's always politics involved no matter what you're doing in this show. And I think this did a really good job of bringing all that to the front. And man, you're right. That actor who plays the priest just nails him. He just annoys me to no end. And I want to be like, fuck this guy, fuck this scene, fuck everything about this relationship. But like, it's really good. And I kind of like, all right, you're bringing that out of me. You're bringing all this out of me, so you're doing your job. And
the other thing I forgot to say about him is that, but you know, after everyone's had a good night's sleep after their day of laying their shit out, and after waking up realizes, oh, maybe it's easier to just pretend we don't see all this stuff. Even Intintola is included in that. Like,
yeah.
I don't think we're supposed to think he was blackout drunk or that he was so sick that he forgot everything that she said. But it's also like, I don't recall it ever coming up again, really, after that. And even Meadow, when she sees Tony in the car and his hands all fucked up, she's like, what happened? And he tells a very obvious lie and she very obviously doesn't believe it. But it's like, we've talked it out enough. Let's just let this one go.
Other minor details that I enjoyed. I really enjoyed the rural New Jersey scenery, such as it is, the weirdly out of place trailer shack of a travel.
I think that was supposed to be Maine, but I'm not sure where it was
in Maine. Oh, yeah, right.
It was supposed to be Maine, yeah.
And the cute little motel with that great sign that I really want.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the wood writing.
Yeah.
Oh, Odinoki like or whatever.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that too. The one thing about that fuck you fuckwad line, I think that really pops out is it's so obviously an ADR addition.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like they were doing punch up for insults at the end of the show because it's like so out of cue with the rest of the audio in that scene. It works really great.
Or like it was her one line that got her SAG card. It's not like it's anyone famous now.
No.
And she's like, guys, SAG's giving me a problem about the card. Can you just juice the audio on that a little bit?
Yeah.
But and also a bit of cursing
meeting
on the
people
show.
In bars. You ever see that episode of Sopranos called College? And there's that one woman. She says, "Fuck you, you fuckwad." That's tough for me.
Say the line, Doris. Say it.
Also, I have to say, after watching this episode, if I don't get a reheated baked ziti in front of me, like immediately, I can't even deal. That just made it like, oh god, they just talked about it so much,
and the prop food on the show, crazy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, all the things that the priest is wrong about in the episode, he is right that it's better reheated.
Yeah.
It is, though. It is.
All right, so I say let's put this to a vote, Tara.
Yay.
Joe?
Yes.
3-3, I vote yes.
Woo!
All right, Sopranos, Season 1, Episode 5, College. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Malone.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Losers of the Week. And Joe, you have our winner this week, I believe.
Yeah, this one's pretty easy and clear cut. Tina Fey's making new television in the future. So that's a big win for all of us. She and Robert Carlock are getting together for what is being described as a female workplace comedy that also somehow has something to do with Fire Island. I'm in on all of that. And then Tina Fey and Robert Carlock and Matt Hubbard are getting together for a show about a formerly all-girls college that has opened its doors to men. Both of those seem like interesting enough ideas that I can't imagine that Tina Fey and Robert Carlock and Matt Hubbard won't bring their considerable talents to making it something I will absolutely need to watch. So,
and our loser?
The loser of the week is Ms. Oprah Winfrey. Her interview with Lindsay Lohan on Sunday drew modest ratings. Actually, they were shockingly bad. It was under a million people. I think that her big mistake was actually putting the special on Sunday. I think the show usually airs on Friday nights.
No.
Like her Lance usually... Armstrong. Oh, no.
That one might have been, but no, it was in its regular time slot.
I mean, whether it was Lance or Lindsay was the issue. I think if she had put this on Friday, it would have done a lot better. But she just threw it in with like the harshest time slot of the week.
Yeah.
And no one watched it. Or a lot of other people felt like I do, which is that looking directly at Lindsay Lohan will open the Ark of the Covenant in some way. And it's just like, let's just all like eyes on the ground until she's got more than 4 days out of rehab.
Yeah.
I did watch it. It was boring. That could have been the problem.
Yeah.
It needed more brassieres. I know that. But yeah, it was a bad showing for a get that Owen was really touting for a long time.
I'm curious to see how this will affect the reality, like the eight-part series is that's coming up that Lohan is doing for Owen. I also think part of the problem may be no one knows what Owen is or where it is on their cable guide.
Right.
Because I saw a lot of people tweeting about that. Like, where is...
Yeah, shockingly enough, though, Lindsay Lohan filling in for Chelsea Handler for that one night on Chelsea Lately, very good.
I heard
good
that.
Things.
Really good. Like, you, I would watch Lindsay Lohan host that talk show in a way that I don't watch it with Chelsea Handler, so there's that.
Work release program.
Yeah.
Do
it, guys, you know what time it is?
I think so.
It's game time.
Oh, yes!
All right, everybody, for our first game time back, we are going to play a game called Crossover Couples, which comes from Kathleen, who earns herself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of her choosing. And those minis will start soonish. Special thanks to the folks at EHG Assist on Twitter for helping me fill out this quiz after an unsuccessful attempt to play it last week on our terribly aborted podcast. In Crossover Couples, I am going to name two characters that come from two separate TV shows, okay? The two actors involved have appeared together as a couple on a third TV show. We're going to take turns. You've got a possible 3 points for each question I'm going to ask you, okay? So you're going to give me the show and the characters of that couple from that show. Make sense?
Yes.
All right. We've got 30 questions for you all, and Tara was chosen to go first. Are we ready to play Crossover Couples?
Yes.
Ready as we're going to be.
All right. Tara.
Yeah.
Holly Flax and Hector Madden. Talk it out for the folks back home.
Hector Madden is Dominic West. Holly Flax is Amy Ryan, and they were a couple on The Wire.
Okay, The Wire is 1 point.
Yes.
I need the characters' names from The Wire.
Oh, right. Jimmy McNulty, and her name was Beatty.
Correct, Beatty Russell.
Okay. Nice.
And now we move to Sarah.
No, we moved to Joe.
Amy Gray and Tom Kane.
And Tom Kane?
Tom Kane.
Shoot.
K-A-N-E. Amy Gray and Tom Kane.
Gray is not one of the Grey's Anatomy Grays. Sorry, and the guy's name was what again?
Kane. With a Kane.
K. With a K.
Tom Kane.
Oof. Gosh, Amy.
It's a tough one.
No, I'm blanking.
Amy Gray is from Judging Amy.
Sarah knew that one.
Tom Kane is from Boss. He is the mayor from Boss. And together, they were a couple on Frasier with Faye and Frasier.
Wow. Okay.
Sarah.
Yes.
Your two characters, Gossip Girl and Schmidt. The actors
Gossip
that
Girl
play Gossip
and
Girl
Schmidt.
And Schmidt appeared together on another show as a couple.
Okay.
Name that show and the character names.
Name the show and the character names. I believe they were a couple on Veronica Mars. She was Veronica Mars. And he was Deputy Leo.
That's good enough.
Woo, nice.
Very right, well Tara. Done.
Thanks, yep. Recent rewatch.
Selena Meyer.
Yep.
Selena Meyer.
Yep.
And Johnny Johnson.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Oh, the character, duh. Elaine Benes.
Give me the show.
Seinfeld. Elaine Benes. And David Putty.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. I know his
Selena
first name.
Myers from Veep. Johnny Johnson was from News Radio.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Karen Filippelli. And Shay.
And Shay?
Yeah.
Shoot. Karen Filippelli is very familiar. God.
Karen Filippelli and Shay.
Parks and Recreation? Okay. And it's who's the couple? Well, it's Anne. And it's now I've got to guess. Andy?
Correct. Oh, 3 points. Karen Filippelli from The Office. And
right.
Shay
from The OC.
The OC, correct.
Oh, right. Yes.
The latter seasons no one cared about.
All right.
Shay is in Guevara, yes.
Chrissy Snow and Bobby Ewing. Chrissy Snow and Bobby Ewing.
Is this for me?
Yes. Yep.
Chrissy Snow and Bobby Ewing. Do we get partial points for any of this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. What was the name of that? Just the 10 of Us.
Close.
All right.
Chrissy
Snow
is from what?
Three's Company.
Yeah, that's right.
Bobby Ewing is from Dallas. I don't remember the name of the show that they were both on.
The show was Step by Step. But you know the actors, Sarah.
Yeah.
You know who played them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Oh. She doesn't get partial credit for
unless
saying
their last name was
the show
the
and the characters.
Okay. Well, you just asked if you get partial credit.
Yeah, for you get 1 point for the show, you get 1 point for each character.
Oh, because she doesn't know the character names. I'm sorry. I keep thinking the actors are part of it. Sorry, Dave. Dave is so mad right now, you guys.
Snow White.
Yes.
Randall McCoy. Need the show.
Big Love.
Need the character.
Margene. And Bill.
And Snow White is from?
Dang.
From Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. And Randall McCoy from Hatfields and McCoys.
Okay.
All right. Joe.
Okay. Yes.
Piper Holloway and Carter Gallivan.
Piper Holloway and Carter Gallivan.
Yes.
Piper Holloway is...
It's from
I
what?
I think from Charmed.
That's right.
So the show, the other show with her would have been... Oh, God. Oh, you know those Holly Marie Combs shows. They're a dime a dozen.
Piper Holloway
Pretty Little Liars? Okay. Her character's name is Ella. And his, it's the guy from Life Goes On. But whatever, his character's name is Byron.
Correct.
Nice.
Joe got the full 3 points. Piper Holloway, yes, from Charmed. Carter Gallivan from Melrose Place.
I thought it was Hollowell.
From Melrose Place.
Hollowell.
Oh. Chad, Low.
Yes, Holloway. All right. Sarah?
Yes.
Kim Legaspi. Legaspi, yeah. And Charlie Salinger. Legaspi.
Kim Legaspi?
You know this one.
Charlie Salinger. I know I do. Charlie Salinger was Matthew Fox. He was on Party of Five. Kim Legaspi. Okay. I'm going to guess that the show is Lost. And his character's name was Jack. And her character's name was Kate. Oh, do I at least get two?
You got two points out of that one. Her name, character's name was Juliet. That was Dr. Kim Legaspi from ER.
From ER.
And Charlie Challenger from Party 5.
Everything. If you'd put her in V, I would have gotten it. How sad is that? All right, two it is.
Woo. All right, we're one third the way through this game, pretty much. Tara, what's her score?
Sarah has 5. Joe has 6. I have 9.
All right. And it is your turn now, is it not?
Yes.
Elizabeth Jennings.
Yep.
And Kate Ballard.
What was the second person's name?
It's Elizabeth Jennings and Kate Ballard.
Okay. Carrie Russell.
Nope, sorry.
Damn it.
you can say characters' names, actor names all you want. That's not what you get.
Felicity Porter.
Give me the show.
Felicity? Okay.
Give me the character names.
Felicity Porter. Noel? Oh! Nice.
All right. Joan Harris and Richard Castle.
Oh, okay. This is Christina Hendricks and Nathan Fillion. They were in Firefly. He was Malcolm Reynolds. She was... Shit, we did this as a canon episode, too.
Yeah, we did.
What was her name?
Joan Harris from Mad Men. Richard Castle
Princess
from Castle.
Princess Hoots and Fruits. No, what was it? It was like... All right, this isn't my answer, but it was like Sadie Saffron?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Hey!
Yes! Okay.
Nice.
All right, Sarah.
Way to talk it out.
I muscled that one through, didn't I?
Brooke Armstrong. Dale Cooper.
Brooke Armstrong and Dale... Oh, jeez. Nice. Okay, they were on Sex and the City together. As... Charlotte, York, and, What was his name?
What was his name? Dale Cooper.
I have
from
a
Twin
name
Peaks.
In my head that is totally wrong. His name was, I can picture his mom and their dogs. Damn it. Kyle. It's not Kyle.
Trey
McDougal.
Trey.
All
I was
right.
thinking it was something super Scottish, which that is not.
Damn it. All right, well,
Debbie,
two.
Debbie Wilson.
Yeah.
And Tony Gates.
I don't know.
Debbie Wilson from 90210 and Tony Gates from ER together on Full House as Becky and Jesse.
Okay.
All right. Joe. Claire Dunphy and Dan Dorian.
Claire Dunphy and Dan Dorian. Oh, okay. Scrubs is the show. No, sorry. Scrubs is the show that Dan Dorian's from. It's Ed is the show. Ed. And Carol.
Nice.
Who I only know because of all the times that Tara has called Carol a quote-unquote world-class C.
Yeah.
It's all true.
And I stand by that.
All right, Sarah. Lily Aldrin and Chris Griffin.
Billy Aldrin and
Lily.
Chris Griffin?
Lily Aldrin. As in Lily of the Valley.
Okay.
Lily Aldrin, Chris Griffin are the two characters from two different shows that appeared as a couple on this show, says Sarah.
I have no idea about any of the origins or results. Pass.
Lily Aldrin, anybody know what show?
How I Met Your Mother.
That's right. Chris Griffin.
Family Guy.
Together as
Buffy. On
yep.
Buffy.
Yep.
As
oh,
Oz
right.
And
Willow and Oz.
That's
oh,
right.
Okay.
All right. Tara.
Yes.
Sarah Walker.
Uh-huh.
Adam Braverman.
The show is 6 Feet Under, and their characters were Nate and Billy and... I can't remember her name. I don't know.
Brenda.
Brenda! Oh.
Sarah Walker from Brothers and Sisters and Adam Braverman from Parenthood. All right. Joe, Casanova and Hannah Baxter. Casanova.
Sorry, what was the first name again?
Casanova. And Hannah,
Baxter. Just Casanova, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like an awesome character I would like to know in real life.
I'm going to take a flying leap and say this one's going to be very hard.
Yeah, Hannah Baxter. None of these, neither one of these ring a bell.
Casanova was from Casanova. And Hannah Baxter from Secret Diary of a Call Girl, together on Doctor Who as Rose.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't going to get that.
Some British bullshit.
hey.
Sorry, Britain.
Noah Werner and Jessica Pearson.
Noah Werner and Jessica Pearson.
Maybe Pearson. I don't know.
No, it's Pearson.
Is it Pearson?
Yep. Okay.
It doesn't matter what it is. I don't know this one either.
Noah Werner from Suburgatory. Jessica Pearson from Suits, together on Firefly as Zoe and Walsh.
Never have known that.
Yeah, no.
From any direction.
Sarah has 7. Joe has 12. I have 14.
All right. Here we go. Winona Hawkins and Mark Antony.
The following.
The following is right.
And their characters are Joe.
Joe is correct.
And Claire?
Correct. Winona Hawkins from Justified, Mark Antony from Rome. All right. Scott Quitman and Gia Goodman.
Okay. Gia Goodman. Okay. I'm going to try and work this one out. Gia Goodman was on Veronica Mars, and that was Kristen Ritter. Kristen Ritter, I'm going to guess that the show you're looking for is Breaking Bad. And that's got to be Aaron Paul's character from Big Love. So Jesse Pinkman. And her name was...
The following, which is, of course,
I will begin to formulate with my mouth. What was her name?
Imagine her choking on her own vomit.
Yeah. I was going to say, Vomity O'Neill.
Chokes McGraw.
One of the lesser Charlie's Angels.
Right.
Good old Chokesy.
Shit, sorry.
Jane!
Damn it. Oh, I would never have gotten that either.
Poor Jane. Yeah.
Britt Pollock and Allison Cameron.
Britt Pollock?
Yep. P-O-L-L-A-K. And Allison Cameron. Any idea what those characters are from?
I really have no idea what those characters are from. Sorry, I'm having this mid-season slump. No. It's from sitcoms. I'm not going to know it.
Once Upon a Time?
Yes, that is the show they share in common. What's Britt Pollock from?
He's from Terriers.
Yep. Allison Cameron, anybody?
Don't know.
From House. And together they are on Once Upon a Time as Neil and Emma.
Right.
All right. Thomas T.J. Oh, boy.
This is me? Yes. Yep.
Thomas T.J. Jesus Christ. J-A-R-U-S-Z-A-L. Ski.
Okay. T.J. Polish.
Yeah. T.J. Polis. Thomas T.J. Polis.
Uh-huh.
And Josie Anderson. Wow.
The Secret Life of the American Teenager?
House of Cards is Peter Russo and Christina Gallagher. Thomas is from Law & Order and...
Oh, yeah, Law & Order LA.
As the World Turns is Josie Anderson.
God. Oh, wow.
The one no one watched. Oof.
All right.
Okay.
Kitty McAllister and Ed Gein.
Okay. Kitty McAllister, Calista Flockhart... I'm going to guess the show is Allie McBeal. Her name is Allie McBeal. And what was the guy's name?
Ed Gein.
Okay.
Ed Gein.
That's giving me nothing. I'm going to say, though, the only paramour of Allie's I remember was Billy.
What if I told you his full nomenclature was Detective Ed Gein? He's from Law & Order, and he played Dr.
Jesse L.
Greg
Martin.
Butters.
I wouldn't have known his character,
no one
though,
would have
but
known
yeah.
That character name.
Okay. Hannah Bibb and Tom Wakefield. Hannah Bibb and Tom Wakefield.
Hannah Bibb. I feel like I am confusing Hannah Bibb with Leslie Bibb.
Yeah.
And since I'm not sure who the other one is either, I'm just going to say it's popular.
Hannah Bibb is okay. From Felicity. That was Sidney Bristow's character.
Garner.
Tom Wakefield is from Hawthorne, and he's Michael Vaughn on Alias with Sidney Bristow.
Right. Hawthorne.
Okay. Yeah.
The idea that anyone watched that show is hilarious.
You know, this game, this game gives you a matrix in which
it
you
does.
Can... It's like Sudoku for characters.
Yes.
You're right.
Bunk Moreland and Catherine Duke. Bunk Moreland from...
Wow.
Bunk Moreland from The Wire.
Uh-huh. Catherine Duke's from...
From News Radio.
And they appeared together in... As a couple in...
Treme?
As...
I don't know what their characters are.
LaDonna Batiste Williams and Tony and I lost it.
Doesn't matter.
Something Batista, anyways.
Treme.
Yes, Treme.
Tremayman.
Okay, Peter Florick and Patty Green.
Peter Florick.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Noth on The Good Wife. And Patty Green?
Patty
Is this
Green.
Sex in the City? Is this Carrie and Big?
Correct.
All
three
right.
points. Patty Green from Square Pegs.
Square Pegs, sure. Yeah.
All right. Bob Belcher and Charlie Wheeler.
Bob Belcher and Charlie Wheeler?
Yeah, Wheeler. As in wagon wheeler.
Right. Charlie Wheeler. I am going to kick myself when I hear them, but I do not know what they are.
Bob Belcher is Bob from Bob's Burgers. Charlie Wheeler is from Friends, played by Alicia Tyler. Elijah Tyler. And they were together on Archer as Sterling and Lana Kane. All right.
Oh.
We are almost at the end of our game. Everybody has one more question left. What's the score, Tara?
Sarah's at 7. I'm at 18. Joe is at 19.
Whoa.
Yikes.
All right.
Ooh, done.
So this is between Joe and Tara for the win.
Was it ever thus?
Lana Winters, Chandler Bing.
Okay.
No, it's me. This is me.
Yes, it is Tara.
Okay.
Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. Matt. And Harriet.
Ah!
Well done, lady.
All 3 points. Okay. Joe.
Yes.
Peggy Olson. Burton Guster.
Peggy Olson, Elizabeth Moss. All right. This is a guess. This is The West Wing. This is Zoe Bartlett.
Okay, wait. You and Tara are now tied, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
And for the win,
Charlie Young.
For the win.
Nice job, Joe.
All right, let's round it out with Sarah's last question. Sarah Braverman, Don Draper. Sarah Braverman and Don Draper.
All right, well, Don Draper is played by John Hamm. Sarah Braverman is someone that I should probably remember and don't. I'm not sure what else Don Draper was on. So once again, 'twas ever thus. I don't know. Hit it.
Anybody want to take a guess at that one?
Gilmore Girls?
That's right.
Oh, John Hamm was on Gilmore Girls?
They weren't a couple, though, really. That's,
well, it's couples fooling around.
They should have been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Lorelai and Peyton. Peyton's character.
Yeah.
All right, congratulations, Joe.
Thanks.
Joe.
Well, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We looked back at the TV shows of the summer and gave you our picks for the best, the worst, and the good enough. We inducted The Sopranos' College into the canon. And we crowned winners and losers of the week, and Joe was the first winner of this season's Game Time. We are at Twitter at Previously TV, Facebook at Previously TV, and of course on our site at Previously.tv. Use the hashtag EHG. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Big Z,
Joe Reed,
Baked ZD,
and Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm a loser.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you right next time here on Extra Hot Great.
How did you survive my free poison soda secret attack?
I only drink juice.
But soda is better than juice.
Maybe to you.
To everybody.